Well, good morning, TNC family, on this final Sunday in May, where today here we conclude our series on wisdom. Wisdom is supreme, Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 7 declares. So, get wisdom, though it costs you all you have. Gain understanding. And in the series, we've talked about wisdom surrounding your thought life, your friendships, your sources of information, how to discern between truth and opinion, faith, science, the natural world. And now, at the end of this series, I want to suggest one final area to think about as we pursue living a life of wisdom, and that area is time. Because all the great wisdom literature calls out, cries out, urges us to understand the power and the priority of time. In Hinduism, time itself, or kala, is considered to be a force, one of the most significant forces in the universe. In the Buddhist tradition, there's a proverb that goes, "Tomorrow never comes," calling us to realize that all we have are today's seconds, minutes, and hours. In the Jewish scriptures, the author of the book of Ecclesiastes reminds us, chapter 3, there is a season for everything and a time for every event under heaven, a call to us to learn what is the right activity, what do I need to be doing at this time. And then the Apostle Paul in the New Testament, in his letter to a people he loves, Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 15, live purposefully and carefully, not as the unwise and witless, but as wise, sensible, intelligent people, making the very most of your time. And in all of these traditions, what we see is the link between time and wisdom, between wisdom and time. And what's wonderful is you are as rich as any other human being when it comes to your time. I mean, some folks have more money than you, or better health than you, or closer friendships than you. But time, think of how unfair it would be if some of us had, say, 19 hours a day, and others of us had 25 hours a day. But the universe in this way has been generous and fair to everybody because we have all been given 1,440 minutes each day. And how we use our time is directly linked to the peace, joy, happiness, love, and purpose we will experience in our lives. Or I like the way author and educator Stephen Covey put it years ago. He got his MBA from Harvard, went on to get a PhD in religious education from BYU. Then he taught all over the country, was considered by Time magazine in the late 1990s to be among the 25 most influential people alive. And then who famously wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which has sold over 20 million copies. And the way he framed time was, we need to stop thinking in terms of spending our time and rather think about investing our time. And he would follow that up by saying that ineffective people simply don't use their time wisely. And again, you see him talking about the link between time and wisdom, between wisdom and time. And so, for a few minutes now, I want to consider with you your time and some wisdom rooted in the scriptures surrounding how we think about and invest our time. Here's the first bit of wisdom surrounding your time. Number one, number your days, which is the direct counsel of Psalm chapter 90 and verse 12. Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. There's that connection, time and wisdom. Or as the New Living Translation puts it, teach us to realize the brevity of life so that we may grow in wisdom. Because part of becoming wise is understanding that life is fragile and brief, and your days and my days are numbered. We have a finite supply. And here's why this engenders a heart of wisdom. Because when you realize you have a finite supply of something, you treat it with far more care, value, appreciation, and love. For example, and this is a rather silly example, but it may help us get at it. For me, when I buy a flat of Oreos, and I'm really enjoying these days the lemon cream ones. When I buy a flat of Oreos and first open them, say while watching the NBA playoffs or some Braves baseball, I'll sort of mindlessly eat them because there is an uneatable supply at the beginning. But then, a couple days later, if I go to the cupboard, say while watching the NBA playoffs or some Braves baseball, and I pull back the seal and I only see like 4 Oreos left, then I generally will eat them more slowly, break apart the cookie from the filling, scrape off half the filling with my teeth, savor what's there. This principle is why in the first quarter of a basketball game, in the first minutes, coaches let the clock run without even thinking much about it. But in the fourth quarter, they pay super close attention to the clock, calling timeouts and huddling up and planning how they're going to execute the final seconds. And this is part of what Psalm 90 is saying about time, which is you have a finite supply of it, and you have less of it now than you had last Sunday. And so let that help you move towards decisions and moments of greater love and joy and peace and appreciation. This is a point made powerfully and memorably by Billy Crystal, the comedian and actor, the Oscar Awards host and philanthropist, who in 2006 wrote a book called 700 Sundays, a book about many things, including about his father, for whom the book gets its title, 700 Sundays, in which he writes at one point, quote, "My father worked so hard for us all the time. He held down two jobs, including weekend nights. The only day we really had alone with him was Sunday. Sunday was our day for my two brothers and I to put on a show and make my parents laugh, or to go to the boardwalk in Long Beach and play skee ball, or go to the batting cages, go bowling, go to the movies, or even a Broadway show. And Sunday night was our night to eat together. We'd always go out for Italian food or Chinese food. Dad would come in like 3-4 o'clock on a Sunday morning after working all weekend. And just as the sun came up, I would tiptoe over to my parents' bedroom, which was right next to my room in the back, and I would quietly open the door just a little, and there they would be, Mom and Dad, lying there looking so quiet and peaceful together, and I would sit in the doorway waiting for Dad to wake up just to see what we're going to do together that day. I just couldn't wait for Sundays." And then he writes that same sentence again. "I just couldn't wait for Sundays." But then Crystal writes, it's the very next sentence, "He died suddenly when I was 15. I once calculated that I had roughly 700 Sundays with him." That's it, 700 Sundays. Not a lot of time for a kid to have with his dad. Teach us to number our days, because it will give us a heart of wisdom, the psalmist says. TNC, how many Sundays do you or I have left, I wonder? Now, number two, second bit of wisdom about time, which flows directly from number one. Number two, plan your time tomorrow, today. Plan tomorrow's time today, because, and listen now to Proverbs chapter 21, verse 5, "The plans of the diligent lead to abundance, but everyone who is hasty comes only to poverty." Listen too to Proverbs chapter 31, where the author personifies wisdom and says, verse 16, "Wisdom considers a new field before she buys it, and she expands prudently, not neglecting her present duties, and," listen to this, "with her savings of time and strength, she plants fruitful vines in her vineyard." In other words, if you invest 15 to 20 minutes today into planning tomorrow, you'll actually save time and strength tomorrow. Think of it this way, 15 minutes today equals 60 minutes tomorrow, because it'll be harder to get distracted and things won't go by in a blur, and you'll have a focus on what needs to be accomplished. And I love what writer and social genius Gretchen Rubin says in chapter 5 of her book Better Than Before, which is titled, "If It's on the Calendar, It Happens," in which she says, basically, schedule everything. Habits, conversations, work, free time, sleep, entertainment, projects. And then, after you've scheduled it, make the calendar your boss. And if at the end of the day things didn't go well, don't blame your distractions, blame your schedule. And she writes about observing a photograph of singer Johnny Cash's schedule one day, and on Cash's sheet were the words, "Not smoke, kiss June, eat but not too much, worry, go see mama, practice piano." After which she writes, "Why did he schedule worry? Sounds odd, but it's a proven strategy for reducing anxiety. Instead of worrying continually, a person saves the worry up until the appointed time and then worries until the time is up." You see it, TNC? It's the link between time and wisdom, between wisdom and time. And point number two today is you ought to know today if tomorrow's going to be good because you've planned it. Because wisdom says plan tomorrow's time today. Now, number three, third bit of wisdom surrounding your time, deal with problems when they're small, because it takes far less time to deal with a small problem than with a large problem. Think of that proverb, a stitch in time saves nine. It's from the sewing world. A stitch in time is simply the sewing up of a small hole in a piece of material, saving the need for more stitching at a later date when the hole has become larger and requires nine stitches. And I know you understand this because a stitch in the nick of time, it's why you roll up your car windows when it starts to rain. A stitch in time is why you take a few seconds to take off your shoes in the garage or by the front door after playing or working outside, so you don't have to devote way more time cleaning the dirt that you've tracked all over your house. It's why you rinse your dishes off right away after eating, because it takes 10 seconds right after you eat, but three times as long after the food has dried and crusted on the plate. It's part of the value of flossing your teeth for like 60 seconds a day, so later you don't deal with a toothache for weeks and then take time off work to see the dentist and then spend a ton of money on the filling or the crown or the root canal. And the question for you and me is, what do you need to spend minutes on today so you don't have to waste hours tomorrow? Does it involve a follow-up text? A kind word, an invitation to make or accept, daily exercise, setting aside a little bit of money from every paycheck, dealing with a habit, responding to a request. See, it turns out that the biggest risk to your future isn't your competition or external things that might happen. It's the excuses and the distractions you insist on keeping in your life, rather than doing the small things you know you should be doing but aren't. And you know, it's also ironic to me. I think people delay doing things they don't like for longer than it takes to do them. At least I know for me, there have been times in my life where I knew I needed to do something, but I filled my time not doing that thing. And then the moment I did it, I was like, wow, that took way less time than I thought it was going to take. And not only that, it took way less time to do it than it took me to delay doing it. And if I'd only started with just doing it, doing what I was supposed to do, I could have finished two or three other things that I was supposed to do by the time I finished just this one. And so, thinking about it from that perspective, I've tried to eliminate as much time between when I think I should do this thing and beginning to do it. Because the wisdom is solve problems while they're small, and you'll leverage all kinds of time. There's a link between wisdom and time, time and wisdom. And here's number four, fourth bit of wisdom about your time. Take the longer view. In whatever moment you're in, always put it in the context of the longer view. This is just a way of saying that what happens today during these seconds, minutes, and hours is just one day in time. It doesn't define your life. So whatever happens today, embrace it for what it is, but understand that it's just a snapshot on a longer timeline. It's not the entire story of your life. Reminds me again of that ancient story of a poor farmer who's given a horse. That's good news, his neighbors say. But the farmer replies, good news, bad news, who can say? But he embraces the moment. He takes his limited resources, buys a plow instead of his hand tools, hooks him up to the horse for the growing season. He anticipates his best harvest ever, but then one day the horse runs away. That's bad news, the neighbors say. Farmer replies, good news, bad news, who can say? But he gets back out his old hand tools and goes on preparing for his crops. And then after several days, the horse comes back and brings another horse with him. Good news, the neighbors say. And the farmer gives the second horse to his son, who rides it, but then is thrown and badly breaks his leg. Bad news, the neighbors say. But 2 weeks later, the emperor's men come to the village and take away every able-bodied young man to fight in a deadly, needless war, and every son of that village is killed, except the farmer's son is spared. And the story ends, and the wisdom is, be careful you don't tell your story too soon, which will lead you to either complacency or defeat, rather than it providing you with the curiosity or the perseverance you need to move forward. Let me give you one example. This is from the sphere of your finances, and I think you'll be able to apply this to any area. The financial expert Dave Ramsey often talks about the difference between a snapshot and a film strip. He says too many people see their money as a snapshot when it's really a film strip, because in the next frame, your financial situation will either get better or worse. And then in the frame after that, it will either get better or worse. And then he says, 3, 4, 5 years from now, you are actually likely to be okay if you simply make good decisions in your current snapshot. You may not be able to control the cost of meat or eggs or gasoline, but you can control if you take an extra job. You can control if you cut your budget on a bunch of things that aren't necessities. What you can control is maybe you don't go on a vacation right now. What you can control is anything within your control. And if you control what you can control, then you're going to create margin in your next frame, he says, and the film strip will tell a different story than the snapshot did. This is so helpful, TNC. Listen, you should be far more interested in your trajectory than in your current situation. Especially if right now you feel buried in some challenge or grief or scarcity. If you just take a snapshot of your life, and the snapshot is, this is such a hard season, please understand, that's just a snapshot. It's a moment in time, so take the longer view. Time and wisdom and time, they're related. And finally, fifth bit of wisdom about your time, 5, prioritize what will outlive you more than what will rust and rot. Or as Jesus says, 6, don't store up treasures here on earth where moths eat them and rust destroys them and where thieves break in and steal. Store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and rust cannot destroy and thieves do not break in and steal. Or I think of Paul's words to the church at Corinth, 15, 58. He's talking about the resurrection of all things, the final renewal of heaven and earth. Therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. In other words, somehow what you do in the present, somehow, it matters not just for these seconds, but also for the things of eternity. Somehow the good you do now, the beauty you create now, will be part of the new world that God's going to make then. I think of Jesus' words in 9, that even when you give a cup of cold water to a person who is thirsting, even that small act of beauty, Jesus says, will not go unremembered. Somehow even that will be taken up and woven into this great tapestry of the new creation. And we don't always know how my generosity with money, with kindness in my words and deeds, with this painting, my gardening, my managing, my music, my welding, my nursing, how it will make it, but somehow it will. There's that old analogy of a stonemason working on a pattern in a single block of stone that will ultimately be part of a cathedral. And the stonemason is told to just carve this bit of stone with this particular pattern, and the mason can't see in the moment how their pattern will fit into the next stone and its pattern because someone else is working on that. But it's only when all the stones are gathered and put on the great western front of the cathedral that it all makes sense. For we're creating beauty one stone at a time, one day at a time, one interaction at a time, and somehow all of it matters. Not just for others, but for you and for me too. So, let's number our days and plan for tomorrow and deal with problems when they're small and take the longer view and prioritize those things which will neither rust nor rot. Let's prize wisdom. Because 4:8 says, if you prize wisdom, she will make you great. Embrace her and she will honor you. She will place on your head a garland of grace. She will present you with a crown of beauty. Those are images from a foot race. In that day, to win a prize meant a garland on your head, a victor's crown. And here in this proverb, it's about not only an earthly crown, but a kind of ultimate garland of grace and beauty that will extend into all eternity. Because, do you hear that? Lady Wisdom is calling. Can you hear Madam Insight raising her voice? She sent out her servants and she calls from the highest point in the city. Let all who are simple come into my house. To those who have no sense, come, eat my food and drink the wine I have mixed. Leave your simple ways and you will live, walk in the way of insight. And now, TNC, I pray that the Lord would bless you and keep you. Make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. Turn his face toward you and give you peace. Amen.